Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's Spiritual Perspectives Radio. I'm your co-host, Dawn Katzen, and joining me as always is the very colorful and vibrant Sarah Vitale. And today we have two very special guests joining the show, the two founders of Humanity Healing. We have Christopher Buck, and returning to the show is Leonie Leger. And for those of you that remember the last time we had Leonie on, I think both Sarah and I could say we were completely in awe by Leonie's depth of spiritual knowledge. And we talked about a lot of things covering Dharma, the fifth dimension, the Akashic Records. And as studied as both Sarah and I are, all I could really say is, wow. And we really needed to get her back on the show. And so we're very excited to have her and also Christopher Buck joining us. But before we get on to putting our thinking caps on, Sarah, I just kind of wanted to give a shout out to you because the last couple of weeks have been really crazy in your life between your son being in the hospital and issues with your dad.
It's been strange.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster. Not only did you get flooded out once, you got flooded out twice.
Well, yeah, there was that, and there was this series of weeks where first I found out that my dad had been diagnosed with cancer, and then I found out that my son had pneumonia and had to spend a couple of days in the hospital, and then Irene hit us, and then another little storm hit us, and it's been wild and crazy up here. We were living off the generator for a while, and we're lucky to have that, but things are back to normal. I have to give a major shout out to FEMA and all the reservists and everyone, the volunteers and our military that have been here in the towns cleaning up. Thank you all so much. They've gotten us back to normal, and just in a couple of weeks, we're almost there. And
wow.
My hearts go out to all the people who lost a loved one or their crop or their home or their livestock. And that's really what we're all focusing on now, is coming together as a community and helping those people get back on their feet. So,
wow. And, you know, Sarah, one of the things about all the shows that we have done, and we have found the common denominator of all of them is love. And
yes.
I just kind of wanted to share with people, anybody that watches Sarah on Facebook or listens to her do this show, I really wanted to kind of give you a shout out to let you know that, you know, no matter what you're going through, you always put so much love into everything you do, including the show. And so I'm sure that, you know, I join our listeners, the people that have been following us, and just really want to give you a big thank you for all the love that you share with us, no matter what you're going through.
I'm so sad we're on the radio because I'm bright red right now. Thank you, Dawn.
You might miss your hair.
Well, when you've got your head in the clouds, you're going to get hit by a rainbow, right? I think
I've
posted something like that on Facebook. And, it's taken me a long time to get here, but I'm just thrilled with life. What can I say?
Very cool. I love it. And just thank you for all that you do. And I especially want to thank you for having
thank
spiritual.
You. Thank
yeah.
you.
And
You've
I
added a whole
want
new
to
dimension
you.
To the show.
Well, thank you. And so, you know, what I also want to thank you for is just starting Spiritual Perspectives, because that gives us the opportunity to have two people on, like the two we're going to have today. And so I'm going to tell people it's time to turn on your brains or turn them off, depending on how your brains work. Me too. And I want people to really open their hearts, because today we're going to go over some very important spiritual perspectives and tools that can help you gain a better understanding into your life and your role in it. But first, before we get into that, I'm going to put Christopher Buck on the hot seat, because Leonie, we've had her on before. We know she is just absolutely amazing, but this is going to be our chance to learn a little bit about Chris. And so, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, Chris.
Hello,
Hi,
Donna,
Chris.
Sarah.
Welcome to the show.
It's a great joy to be here.
thank
course,
you.
Of course, you know, the way you're setting this up, it's going to be next to impossible because nobody compares to Liani.
That's true. That is so
Well,
true.
Everyone is special in their own way. Mr. Rogers said so.
Let's hear it from Mr. Rogers.
Yes, let's hear it from Mr. Rogers. That was a great show for a long time, and he accomplished a lot of good for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you know what, Chris? You are accomplishing a lot of good for a lot of people. And so one of the first questions that I have for you is, we got a little bit of background on how Liani came to Humanity Healing, but what was kind of your role in your path that brought you to Humanity Healing?
Okay, well, that's I guess I get to tell one of my favorite stories then.
I love it.
My background is engineering. You know, I was an engineer for a number of years, very logical thinking. You know, I grew up, my family was, my father was career military. We traveled around a lot, but there was always a very strong emphasis on service to others. You know, I went through the whole Boy Scout thing. I'm an Eagle Scout, et cetera, et cetera. And what happened is I really got to live, you know, the American dream. I went to college, I graduated, I got married, had two phenomenal children, started my own business, and then I started living the American Dream Part 2. Divorced, company went, you know, had trouble, you know, restarted my life, got to be my 40s, and it was, you know, went through the midlife crisis sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I want to do with myself? Et cetera, et cetera. And at that point in time, my kids were old enough, I decided it was time to start dating again.
Okay.
And online dating is a very interesting phenomena. I don't necessarily recommend it to everybody. There's a lot of strange stories out there. But if you are a spiritual person, I'll put a plug in here. If you are a spiritual person, there's a wonderful group called Ascending Hearts that for conscious dating, but that's another story. But I met a woman that became a very good friend, and she had went through her own midlife crisis, and she decided she didn't want to be an accountant anymore. She wanted to become a massage therapist, and I went over to pick her up for dinner, and she said, I learned this coolest thing in class today. Here, hop up on the massage table. And of course I'm like, yes. You know, because, you know, when a pretty girl asks you to get up on the massage table, that's a good thing. So
yes,
I got
absolutely.
Up there. She started talking about chakras and energy centers and pulled out this pendulum. And my eyes started to glaze over at this point because being an engineer and very logical, I didn't believe any of this stuff.
Okay.
It just wasn't in my program.
Got it.
And so she put the pendulum over the sacral chakra, and nothing happened. And I'm like, well, you know, I didn't really expect it to. And she started going
Chris,
up and down.
Sorry,
yes.
I'm sorry, I had that darn delay. I just was wondering if you were even familiar with chakras and that type of thing, and if she explained it to you at all.
Well, she did explain what they were, but it's not something, as I said, it's not something I was familiar with. I hadn't had much I'd had some studies in Eastern religions and things like this as just for interest, but I really saw energy therapy, chakra, especially anything with a pendulum, as being kind of very left coast California-y, not really real world, or not my real world.
Uh-huh. I just wanted to get a perspective of where you're coming, where your mind's coming from. Thank you.
Well, what happened was, of course, nothing happened on any of my chakras. She finally got thoroughly disgusted and said, oh, you are so blocked. And I'm thinking to myself, well, duh, I'm a guy. It's our nature to be blocked. But I didn't want to ruin the evening, so I suggested she hop up on the table, and she showed me where to ping the pendulum over, and I put the pendulum over the sacral chakra, and damned if the thing doesn't start spinning in this 2-inch diameter counterclockwise circle. Well, I'm an engineer. I start running through the numbers in my head. It's like, okay, I've got this much of a moment arm. It takes this much, you know, movement up here to create this. You know, it's like I stop the pendulum. It starts up again. it didn't matter how I did it, how I blocked my arm, whatever, that pendulum would go back to that same movement over that chakra. And as I went up and down over the other chakras, and she had to show me where they were, we had movement of different types on each one. It completely rocked my world. This is something, it's like this is the lightning bolt, you know, on the road to Damascus for me. And I started studying energy therapy because I wanted to understand what this was. And there is actually science behind energy therapy. There's measurement. You can determine the amount of energy that comes out of, say, a Reiki master's hands. You know, there's an interesting device called a bone graft generator that medicine uses for people that, for some reason or other, their bone just doesn't want to restart the growth process after it's been broken. And they put this on, and it produces an electromagnetic field at a certain hertz, and this stimulates bone growth. Well, it turns out to be the exact same range that the human body, through doing an energy therapy like Reiki, can produce through their hands. So you're thinking, okay, there has to be something here. And
absolutely.
I started exploring down along this path, ended up connecting with a type of Reiki called Jinkido, which is a very traditional in outlook and also tied in with Tibetan Buddhism and the healing techniques passed down through that tradition. And one thing just sort of led to another, and Liani and I connected on MySpace, of all places. I had gone there. Actually, a friend of mine had set up a page for me because she wanted to go on to look on MySpace and find somebody because she, you know, to date and to have a relationship with. But she didn't want to look like she had no friends because she was just starting. So she started pages for all her real-world friends and said, oh, you might want to go do something with us. I started a page for you. Well, thank you very much there, Carmen. And what happened was I decided that I would use this media to start looking for other healers in my area because I wanted to do a pro bono work at the local Massey Cancer Center to help people, you know, who were suffering from cancer to get free energy therapy and this sort of thing. And this is what I was putting together when Liani and I kind of stumbled across each other. Liani had had, I don't know from your last interview if she talked about MySpace much, but she had an inspirational page that was based on her personal commitment to the 14 Acts of Mercy.
She went over that with us.
Yes, and I'm still working on mine.
It's a lifelong process.
Because
it's not something that you can just check off your list. It's a way of life. It's a way of living, helping others.
When Liani first talked about the 14 Acts of Mercy, it just struck a chord with me right away, and I don't remember if I said it to Donna on the air or if we talked about it later, but I said, I'm going to do these acts of mercy. And as I started looking, I found that a lot of them I had done already, just being who I am and the life that I've been blessed to lead. So, sorry, a little tangent.
No, that's exactly right. It's beautiful. You know, it's the Master Jesus, you know, came out, I am the way, the truth, and the light. Well, the way is his teachings, you know, what he taught.
Yeah.
You know, we're not, my personal belief is just believing in Jesus isn't enough. You have to follow in his path. You have to do what he taught, not just, you know, say you believe in Jesus.
Right, exactly.
Living the 14 Acts of Mercy or working towards accomplishing this is a way of dedicating your life to a service beyond yourself. And it's really, when you find someone who's committed to doing that, it's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Now, was that one of the denominators of you two actually getting together and as a couple and as a forming
no,
what became?
What happened is, and this is an even more bizarre twist to the story, and we've only now started really sharing this with people. But it's when Leonie first came to this country in 98, on her way to Albuquerque, New Mexico, she came here to study with the Navajo. She was invited to study shamanic practices with the Navajo. She passed through the Atlanta airport, and she was in a bit of a panic because although she had studied English for years, when she got to this country and was in Atlanta with the southern accent in Atlanta, she was in a panic because she really didn't understand what anybody was saying. And she was very distraught. And standing in line in a Burger King, just, you know, really upset, and she managed to spill her bag and everything out of her bag, and all her stuff went everywhere. Well, there just happened to be this debonair gentleman ahead of her in line.
Oh, really?
Who turned around and helped her gather up all her stuff and, you know, put a hand on her shoulder and said, "Don't worry, it'll be okay." And then, you know, I guess he got his soda at Burger King and went off, and 10 years later or so, Leonie sees his picture on MySpace.
Wow.
Go MySpace.
Well, go MySpace. Look at the coincidence of this. I mean, this is just phenomenal. But when she saw this here, she saw that I only had about 70 people in my friends, and at the time she had, I don't know, 14,000, 16,000.
Yeah.
Because she really, you know, she never applied to anybody's page, but because her page was set up the way it was very inspirational. People wanted to be, you know, her friend. And she was in the more top friend spots of anybody else I ever saw. I saw her everywhere when I was going to look for other Reiki people. And finally I got, you know, I heard that her page had got hacked, and I had the nerve to, like, write her a letter and say, you know, "Hi, I heard your page got hacked." And she immediately answered, much to my surprise, and we started trading a conversation back and forth on MySpace, and I kept saying, "Well, I need you to approve my friendship because so I can see your page," and she didn't realize we weren't already friends, but eventually we figured that part out and connected. And a friendship grew here, and what happened is she would send people to me that would need energetic healing, and I would send people to her that needed spiritual counseling.
Wow.
And
what a great partnership.
Well, it's a beautiful partnership, and it's grown
absolutely
phenomenally since then. But what happened was we got, and forgive me if I'm talking too much because I really love these stories, but I'm probably boring the audience.
We didn't invite you on the radio to be quiet, Chris.
Well, no, I know that, but I probably tell these stories way too much. But what happened is we got a, or Leonie received a letter from a gentleman, I believe he's up in Washington State, Leonie?
No, I think it was Pennsylvania.
Okay. But what the gist of the letter was, you know, he's in the hospital, he's got stage 4 cancer, he's got 3 weeks to live, he's willing to try anything.
Yeah.
But please don't ask him to pray because he just doesn't have any faith. And Leonie at the time was on the West Coast, I'm here on the East Coast, and we kind of looked at each other across the country and said, how do we handle this?
That is an interesting question.
So we drafted a letter and we sent it to him, and it basically started with, it's okay if you don't have any faith. We have enough faith for you. And what we did was we called in all the energetic healers we knew. We called in every prayer warrior we knew. Everybody who works on those levels to help others. We sent this message out. And we got a couple of emails back and forth with them at time, letting them know what we were doing. And then all of a sudden it was dead silent for about 3-4 weeks. And we were afraid of the worst. And then we got an email from them saying, I don't know what happened. The doctors don't know what happened. My cancer is in complete remission, and I'm being released from the hospital.
Wow.
And
well, you know, they've done a lot of studies about prayer, and it's been shown again and again that patients that are prayed for recover more quickly and make a better recovery.
It
does. They can't explain it, but it's true.
And, I mean, and there's a lot of interesting studies. I got to edit a scientific paper once on the effects of Reiki on cancer cells. And, you know, one of the criticisms has always been that, you know, the patient knows about it and therefore is you know, his consciousness of it affects his healing because the power of belief is a powerful thing. But when you're working with, like, cells, that doesn't really count. So it is kind of interesting. But getting back to the story, I do want to say that this wasn't Liani and I that did this. This was a huge collective effort.
Yeah, a collective effort of, you know, minds together to make a difference and to show that's possible. You know, I usually say when somebody sends us a prayer request that we really don't have much pull, but we are very persistent, you know. So you can count on us to continue. I'm sorry, I'm still very sick. But aww, to continue praying and sending energy. And that's the reason we set up a series of healing grids all over the world. Now it's like 562 that we have from different healers. So when a healing request comes in, you know, the names are sent to those healers, and they put in the healing grids, and every day the healing grid is charged. So the energy of healing will continue to go for at least 3 months. So every single one of the healing and prayer requests are passed through our, I would say, networks of prayer warriors. There's people that just want to do that. There are people that just want to meditate about it and help you through their personal meditation. And we have another group that's just distant healing. So we keep this going as a free service. Wow. Because that's what we are about.
Right. And that's really what we started with. We looked at each other, you know, when this incredible miracle occurred. And probably the greatest part of that miracle is in his letter. He says, you know, because of this, I'm reevaluating my system of beliefs because there has to be a higher power to generate this kind of miracle. And that, I mean, changing one person on that level is such a joy to be part of, because we really did, all of us that did this, help reconnect this individual into the greater spiritual consciousness of humanity.
And speaking of individuals, I want to say to the individual holding on the line with a question that we will get to your question in the next segment. So just hang in there, and we'll get you on the air in our next segment.
And you see, I was so enamored with what you were speaking, I almost forgot that we actually have to take a quick commercial break. If you're just joining us, today we have Christopher Buck and Liani Leger from Humanity Healing on the show with us. And right after this break, we're going to be opening the phone line. So if you'd like to call in and ask questions or post questions to the chat, we'll be ready for you.
Soul Engineering, an information curation site whose aim is to give readers a place on the internet where they can find resources to grow and love their souls. This site acts under the premise that humans are here on Earth to learn and grow our souls in any way we can. Every time we experience something that resonates with our soul, we grow a little bit more. Whether you're at the top of your game and want to know what's next, or whether you are unsure in which direction you should continue, Soulgeneering is for you. If you are a teenager trying to find out who you are and what you want to do in life, or you are approaching your last years on this planet and have questions about life after death, turn to Soulgeneering. Visit us at www.soulgeneering.com. That's SOULGENEERING.com to learn more.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Spiritual Perspectives. This is your co-host, Sarah Vitale, with you as always with Don Kasten. And today we are lucky to be joined by Christopher Buck and Liani Leger. We are going to go ahead and open up the phone lines in a moment. Before the break, we were just hearing a story from Chris about a cancer patient and how Leonie and Christopher had called in their prayer warriors. And Leonie made a beautiful statement that minds together make a difference. So maybe we'll get back to that topic in a moment. But first, let's see who we have holding on the line. Caller,
hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, you're on Spiritual Perspectives. Did you have a question for us today?
Yes, can you hear me as well?
Yes, we can hear you. What's your name?
Okay, great. My name is Roy Emmanuel, and I'm calling from Canada.
Hi, Edward.
From Emmanuel, yeah, Roy Emmanuel. And I was no problem. It's okay. It's just that recently this year I had no idea. Because I was brought up religiously, but I then found out that religion was really pointless. What we really need to seek is spirituality. And it was through a friend that I discovered this great book, and I think it's a book that that opened. I don't know. You probably guys have heard about it. It's called Our Ultimate Reality: Life, the Universe, and Destiny of Mankind by Adrian P. Cooper.
I'm not familiar with that one myself, personally. Leonie,
yeah.
Chris,
really
Christopher, either of you?
Yeah,
not yet.
We haven't yet. But then again, it seems like we don't get out much because we've got so much going on.
Well, we do receive a lot of books, spiritual books, and spirituality-oriented books through Om Times to do some book reviews. But even that is kind of we're kind of way behind schedule. There's boxes that I'm sorry to say, but I didn't even open. That we receive to review and put an opinion and send back to them and
so you haven't heard
really
of this caller's particular
no.
book, but it's about religion and spirituality. You were saying.
It has nothing to do with spirituality. It's actually a really good book that I think it raises consciousness, and I think that's what's going to come to because the book even says that depending on us as human beings, as immortal spiritual beings that we are, you know, converging from the source of all that is, you know, the Akasha, the ether, the great spirit, and it was saying that how all gonna converge in the events of 2012, and it was great because it was saying that hopefully it will be like a spiritual evolution, and it will give rise to the next evolution of Homo sapiens, who will become Homo spiritus. So it was really
okay.
No problem.
I lost you for a minute. So it's really it sounds like a positive take on 2012 and the raising of the consciousness, and that's something we've talked about on the show here many times. Leonie, what do you think about what the caller's commenting on, the raising of consciousness that's happening?
Well, it is funny because that was actually my line. I was actually thinking about the process of expansion of consciousness and how it works, because a lot of people talk about expanding consciousness, but very little people talk about the mechanism behind of building, you know, your physical and your extra-physical body through this expansion. Because expansion of consciousness is the ability to absorb more light, which is the food that feeds the universe. You know, then light and love, being love and the light itself, the primordial substance that supports and expands. So for us to be inside of this process of expansion, we have to really make this, you know, quantum leap from Homo sapiens, all mental, all three-dimensional, to Homo spiritus, which is the assimilation of this part of us, which is another dimension. You know, spirituality is not something that is outside our reality. It is inside.
It permeates it.
It permeates it. You know, I mean, we are multidimensional beings. We express this in little things in daily lives. Like, you know, Sarah, if you were not a multidimensional being, you would not be able to conciliate the dimension of your motherhood with the dimension of taking care of your dad, or, you know, continuing with your own life. So
right.
There is layers and dimensions that are inside of ourselves. And spirituality is not something new. It always been there. The fact that you integrate this, you know, consciously in your daily practice, that's the key. So this is it's a very important topic, but, you know, where we were talking about human angels, karma, dharma, free will, and a series of topics today, I was meaning to touch about a little bit about the mechanism of the expansion of consciousness and how one
Well, I'm glad our caller brought it up then. Thank you, caller.
Yes.
I'll go ahead and let Liani address the rest of your question. Thank you for calling in.
Let me touch something real quick before we get to the expansion of consciousness, and that's on the subject of 2012. There's a lot of confusion about 2012, what it is, you know, what's going to happen. There's a lot of fear-mongering going out there. You hear about, you know, Common Elemen and Nibiru and destruction of the West Coast of America and things like this. There's a lot of fear-mongering going out there. But that's not really what 2012 is all about. I had one girl or teenager write me once, and it was like, look, I'm getting ready to graduate high school. Is there any even point to going into college if, you know, it's the end of the world in 2012?
Wow.
What I wrote, I told her is it's not, with a Mayan calendar of 2012, you had the end of a cycle. It wasn't necessarily the end of the world. It was, you know, it's the beginning of a new cycle. It's not just an ending. It's a beginning. And it's a window of opportunity for us, I think, as conscious human beings to step forward, to step up to a higher level of spiritual advancement, a higher level of service to humanity.
And maybe this would be a good point I'm sorry, I just wanted to interject quickly before we get too far into this, for people that aren't familiar with the Mayan calendar. It really never ends because it's a system of concentric circles. Isn't that right, Christopher?
That's correct. The Mayan calendar is a series of circles. There is always a beginning at the end of everything. There was a wonderful cartoon I saw a while back. You had this Mayan guy carving one of these giant, you know, circular calendars, and the guy looking over his shoulder saying, "Why are you stopping at 2012?" And the guy was like, "I just ran out of room."
That's my theory right there.
Well, and that's, you know, there is some.
How
some
far do you need
that.
To go, really? I mean.
Well,
what
people need to realize is it is a beginning. It is not
an end. And you see, the transformation is measured by the amount of consciousness. So the end of a cycle of, let's say, of a terrestrial human template and the start of a cycle of a galactic human template with the mentality of expansion mentality, you know, that it is all-inclusive. And all, you know, knowing and all holistic, not a directed, limited, and exclusive mind, you know, type of just mind-based, a mental energy type of analysis and perspective. It's an amplification of this. It's an open vision. So it is the end of the cycle where you had almost more or less what happened with the medieval times, where you have the period of darkness on human consciousness, where fanaticism, radical thoughts, and manipulation got to the limit, and then you have a breakthrough through the the subsequent centuries, which were the century of light. So you have the expansion of art, the creation of encyclopedia, the study of science. You have Galileo Galilei and all the restructuring of the system that we believed before. So creation in itself and humanity are not done. It is an everlasting, and that's, you go back to the dimension of time. What is time? Time for us is three-dimensional. It's very strict. But when you step out of this, immediate reality of 3D, you enter a realm first of the soul, which is timeless.
Yeah, you step from Cronus time to Kairos time.
Yeah. So, and then you go, you get timeless. But when you go ahead and you step out, or you go, even further, you step in the kingdom of God, which is everlasting. So it is all in the, there's nuances to that. But in the concept of eternity, we cannot say that this moment in time is we are done. Now, what give us the right to understand or even take this as a process that we are done? Well, the same thing, argument goes.
That's actually a fascinating question, Liani, and I would love to get some callers' responses to that. So I'm going to go ahead and give out our number. Our number is 949-534-0612. You can also email us at spradioshow@gmail.com. You can jump on our chat board and ask and answer questions there. So sorry to interrupt you, Liani, but I want to make sure that everyone can get a chance to jump into this conversation. This is fascinating stuff that we're talking about.
And actually, I do want to jump in. I have a question here. Although right now at this point in time, as we understand it, that we're in at this time, there's clearly some kind of shift going on in the world, and I don't know if it's leading to this new time that's going to come in 2012, but it just seems like the divide is getting bigger and bigger between the people that are starting to wake up and come into consciousness and the people that are kind of stuck where we've been for a very long time. Do you see that happening, and do you think this is leading up to the new 2012 or the new, the new reality realm?
Yes, indeed, and there's two factors on that. Okay, there's two factors that you can talk about why this difference is getting acute. Uh-huh. Because you have, again, we are spiritual beings having human experience.
Yeah.
We are not necessary souls created on Earth. Earth did not create souls. The soul comes from the divine mind, which is an outsource. That's a funny thing. Inside of God's body, but outside of it, but there's no really real separation. So
okay.
We have two types of humanity. We always did. We have at least two types of humanity, and I'm not going to the discussion of bloodlines, of races, and anything. Two kinds of mindset, guided, oriented, conceived humanities. One is, and it has been, oriented to learn the experiences of, the self individualization, the experience itself to service to self. And the other one, which is actually was guided and built in to experience individuality to service to others. So you have two mindsets here.
Okay.
Service to self and service to others. It was okay. And for a great period of time, it was okay why man was still discovering and questioning what is their position in the universe, what part we are in this huge cosmic, transcendent, multiversal clock. But right now, when Earth itself is traveling, because you see, we are not stuck in one quadrant of the universe. We are traveling. As the Milky Way in our own galaxy expand, it continues traveling through space. And then when we travel to space, we enter dimensions and we enter frequencies. They're different. So right now, you know, inside of the biggest, bigger
cycle,
okay. Earth is traveling to a different part of the universe where the, you know, certain energies that we vibrate are no longer accepted. So she is doing her own trip. You know, she, I'm talking about Gaia, this
yeah.
honorable spirit that has been our mothership, you know, for so long,
uh-huh.
patiently caring for us unconditionally. So
yeah,
as we go through this as humans, you know, we feel the effects and how she goes in each one of, you can say, you know, gateways. You can talk about cosmic gates.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a process, and it's a process that is making acute the difference between mindsets. So it's a moment we were before, the only, I would say, command we had before was to how to live in peace with different mindsets. Now that we, I think we got to a point in our learning on Earth School that, you know, we know what it takes to live in peace. We know that peace is something that is a little bit more complicated than, you know, not bothering your neighbor or
yeah.
not going and bomb another country just because you don't like the way they think. To live in peace, you have to, and usually that's where we say, peace is a fruit of the spirit. Because only a mature spirit that already exercises compassion, exercise tolerance, and exercise wisdom can understand peace. So we got to a point where all the lessons on tolerance, the lessons on compassion, and the lessons on wisdom and knowledge were given to us on Earth School through experience, and we can see that through history. We don't need to repeat history. You have
mm-hmm.
to learn with the experience of others. Now we know how to live in peace. Now it's up to us to transform this theory into practice. Now, if it is not possible, then this will continue to be acute. But, it, you know, at the same time, meanwhile, in the rest of the universe, Earth continues her journey.
To reiterate, you know, the analogy Leonie was using about Gaia being our mothership, it's time for us to stop being just passengers and start actively being crew. We need
I totally got what you're saying.
And Leonie, you had said that we're all in a discovery of on the multiversal clock, and I'm wondering, from your perspective, where do you see us in that journey? Are we getting there? Are we close? Are we just starting?
We had this conversation like 2 days ago, Chris.
Yeah, if you want to look at humanity as a whole, you want to look at individuals. There's still a lot of individualization of the process. We're not thinking
mm-hmm.
humanity-wise as much as we should. This is where we're going. We were one of the primary lessons we were brought to Earth School to learn is that of compassion. And I think that you see this as a trait and as a active function among different people now. It is increasing. Now, part of that's the fact that we have the internet now. We have instant communication
mm-hmm.
around the world. We can see what's happening elsewhere just almost as quickly as it's happening. You know, for instance, take the tsunami that hit Sri Lanka and India. It's look at the outpouring, or the earthquake in Haiti. Look at the outpouring
mm-hmm.
of compassion of people who wanted to help, to rebuild, to save lives. For people that, you know, 100 years ago we wouldn't even have known that it happened.
Now, can I answering your question? What personally, and that was the discussion we had. I believe that right now, humanity is walking in a blade, a very thin, sharp blade, because we have in one in one side, everything we need to stop a process of greed, of non-consciousness, and expand and really transform Earth. And that's one of the topics of the videos, the last video we did. Our responsibility as human beings was to transform Earth, you know, to be our masterpiece. Life on Earth is our masterpiece, not her destruction. But in the same token, when I see the you know, and it's normal, because every time the light gathers more, it would, the darkness gets attracted. So as we create this critical mass of light, and I mean conscious mind saying enough, there's no other planet. We're not going to go to another planet. There is, you know, right now, for at least 50 more years, we have here, and this is what we have to deal with. You don't need to wish your neighbors or other countries away, because they're not going to go away. We have to learn to live together. And the other side, I see an increase of fanaticism, of religious, you know, imposing on greed, you know, and it's like, even in America, you know, I mean, it's like, I am completely
taken back. Yeah, that's, we've really talked
back.
A lot about that in our
you know,
past
I mean, it's like, and I'm talking as a person that came from another country. America has been the beacon of absolutely everything, and it's not a fallacy. You know, you have the right to express yourself. You have the right to be who you are. You know, if people get for granted here, how you can go and, you know, have the beautiful colors you have in your hair, Sarah, and you know, where I came from before, you know, if you put something like this, people put you in a loony bin. You cannot do this. You cannot do that. And suddenly you get to a point that, you know, if you don't believe in, you know, a war that gets created because God talked to somebody that has to go there and bomb, you know, because it's beyond me. It looks much, much like Dark Ages.
It sounds like you're saying is that freedom is so, so precious. But what do you think about that, Dawn?
Well, you know what? It absolutely is. And one of the theories that I have heard is that in time, what's going to happen, and for lack of any other way of being able to say this, but the people that are kind of in the light will no longer even be able to see the people that are in the dark. Like, we might exist simultaneously, but we will not be able to actually see each other, and we will not have play that big of a role upon each other's lives. Do you think that's a possibility?
It is, because you see, everything in the universe is possible. You know, the universe, as we know, is a machine of possibilities and a machine of desires. So be very careful what you wish for. But the thing is, for instance, you know, it really, and I want to do an interjection here, even though humanity healing is a non-political, non-denominational, no this and that. But it really, you know, I read something in CARE 2 2 days ago that one of the candidates of for the presidency, one of the programs is to implement by the state a program to convert homosexuals back to, you know, being straight, because, you know, they believe that this is something that can be prayed away.
And I say good luck to them when it comes to me.
Well, as of God doesn't like his creation, or God discriminated, you know, it's like he likes Steve, but he doesn't like Eve, or vice versa. It's, you know, and this is what I really resent, is every time mankind tries to limit God in order to justify themselves.
And to justify their own ignorance.
Yes.
We as a race, you know, God is infinite. You know, we can't imagine God. We can
not
try.
At this stage of consciousness.
Not
that we
at
are.
This stage of consciousness, because God is so many levels up above us. For us to try to limit God is really
ridiculous.
It's folly. And people that and this is one of the problems with people who use religion for their own political reasons. We're not just talking about here. Look at the bombing of the World Trade Center. Here you had Osama bin Laden who used religion, who used cherry picked out of the Quran to the parts that he needed to justify his own political desires and his will upon others. He didn't. I mean, it's the Quran.
Here's one of our favorite topics, Don. Maybe we can get to that after the break, because we love to talk about using religion against people and what that means and why, what we feel about it. We've talked about that quite a bit, Don.
Absolutely. And you know what? We do need to take another quick break. We're going to have a little message from Angel Boy Arts. And if you are just joining in, we are talking today with Leonie Leger and Christopher Buck, the founders of the founders of Humanity Healing, and really great conversation. Can't wait to get back from the commercial.
Hi everyone, this is Sarah Vitale, founder of Angel Boy Art. At Angel Boy Art, we provide free therapeutic art services to children with special needs and their parents and siblings. Our services include free counseling, in-home art therapy sessions, projects that strive to break down stigmas, and much, much more. We never charge our artists any fees or commissions. Therefore, we rely on donations to support our programs and ask for your help in keeping our programs going strong. Art is a universal form of communication, and for many of our artists, is the only voice they have. Please visit us at www.angelboyart.org to learn more and make your donation today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back again to another episode of Spiritual Perspectives. If you're just joining us today, we are blessed to be speaking with Christopher Buck and Leonie Leger. And just before the break, we started to touch a little bit on the subject of using religion against people. And, Don, that's something you and I have talked about, it seems, on many shows and in many different ways. It seems to just keep coming up. There must be more there to explore.
Well, you know what? And I'm going to say, when it comes to politics and homosexuality or abortion or anything like that, to me, I think that they're really using that as the shiny keys to look over here, so you're really not paying attention to what they're doing. These are topics that they just keep regenerating. If they ever got to the point where they actually made a decision one way or another on to accept homosexuality or not accept homosexuality, they would bring it back up, just because it's a way of keeping people's attention and energy and focus on other things rather than, let's say, looking at our economy or, looking at, the jobless rating or, the many other things that we should be looking at. It's just a way of distracting people, and unfortunately they're using, religious doctrine to back that up.
And you see, the interesting thing about this is that all religion, all of them, have one thing, one strength that goes and permeates all of them. Do not judge others.
Yep, absolutely.
Do not judge. Perfect. So when they take upon themselves and said, oh, we don't judge, but, it's not allowed, homosexuals are not allowed. When opening
how do you reconcile that, Leonie?
And I know, but you see, here's the deal. It is in the Bible. Why it is in the Bible?
Uh-huh.
Because it's part of the Leviticus. Leviticus was actually a congregation of rules that the Israelites in that time needed to put together to affirm themselves. It has a value as a historic document, not as law. It's almost like a report. Why homosexuality was not accepted in the Jewish, pilgrimage, and they were nomads, because they wanted to affirm themselves in that period of time as a nation. And how you affirm yourself? Having kids.
Well, there was incest, though, amongst Christian families, the daughters would often have the father's child. So it seems to me that like with everything else in the Bible, people can kind of pick and choose and take things out of context and use it however they want.
It is interesting with a lot of I don't want to rank on Christians here, but there are a lot of people out there that use Christianity for their own bigotry. That they'll choose something out of Leviticus, for instance, homosexuality, and they say, well, because it's in Leviticus, but at the same time, they won't pay any attention at all to the passage in Leviticus which says that shellfish are bad, so they shouldn't be having that shrimp cocktail.
Yeah. Well, they shouldn't. You see, why it was there? It was there because they lived on a Galilee Sea, and they had what you call the red dye. And they couldn't tell when the oysters or the shrimp was poisoned by the red tide.
Yeah.
So in order to preserve and have a long life, cut oysters and shrimp out of your thing. That was a measure of health. The same way they didn't know how to deal with that illness. So the way that was chosen was to avoid altogether. The same thing of planting, it's Leviticus says that you have to punish people with death if they plant two type of vegetables in the same garden. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a cucumber and a tomato plant, you're doomed.
You're doomed.
Oh, no.
The other part of this whole thing is that, for a Christian, to say it's to go back and use the Old Testament as their this is my justification is wrong on a different level, because as a Christian, Master Jesus came out and said, this is a new covenant. In other words, what I'm teaching you now supersedes what was been taught before. The new, it's no longer an eye for an eye sort of thing here. What we're teaching is
the law of love.
The law of love, the law of one. And that I mean, Jesus even went out and ministered to those Samaritans, for God's sakes.
Wow, and look who he shows. He shows a tax collector, a prostitute, and the little brothers, what they were called, the fishermen on that time. So it's very relative to use that and cherry pick and say things like that, when in that time the Leviticus condensed a rules of living to be healthy and to establish themselves in time as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
So, we no longer live on these times. And I honored the document and everything, and like we don't say that we're Christians anymore. We're not Christians. We're followers of Christ.
We're followers of Christ.
Uh-huh.
There's a difference. But, it's not just Leviticus. Everyone talks about the Ten Commandments. If you go and you read the passages in Exodus on the Ten Commandments, there's a whole lot more commandments that came right after there, and some of them are very, have to do with, you can't, if you, break the tooth, what is it, the chip the tooth of, of like a male slave or a female slave, then, you've got to provide so much, 5 years service off or something. It gets into micromanaging.
Wow. Well, I can certainly
and the like.
I can certainly see within our history that within our history just here in the United States where they would never want something like that to be brought up.
Of course not. It's all a game of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
I want to change the subject a little bit if nobody minds, since we're an hour into the show already.
I was actually going to say the same thing, because as much as I like or love actually these conversations, what I really want to help people with today is how do we get to that deeper understanding of ourselves? Yes.
You're reading my mind, and I was wondering, how the Akashic ties into that, and wow, we're on the same vibe, Don.
All right. So, what is the first topic that you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, I know that this one you guys probably could go on forever, but you know what? I am actually gonna take a little cheat right here, and I am, just amazed by the programs that you offer. through your university. And if people haven't checked it out, I provided a link. I'll provide another link to it. But let's go ahead and start with the Akashic Records. Exactly what are they and what role do they play in our lives?
Okay, the Akashic Record is and works as a gigantic library, a library of registry of every action, every thought, every attitude, every life that ever existed on this dimension, on this plan of existence. The Akashic Records is what, you know, is more or less, and I'm going to, because we have a lot of topics, I'm going to try to be very concise. It's the library is a registry, but is also a system of check and balance. Because every life is registered, every option. And you are writing your Akashic Records every day on what you do and how you evolve and how you program. And you bring from other lives or other parallel dimensions your experiences, because we are multidimensional. And
you were writing this as soul
we speak.
That has encompassed other lives as well.
So it's a system of check and balance. Now, why this system is in place? Because,
yeah,
like I said, God doesn't play dice. You know,
yeah,
what I mean? It's not like, let's see how it goes. it's not like that. And, you know, sometimes you may think that the universe and things are not fair. Why this is happening to me? It's happening because, first of all, the universe has a program, and they have to go with the program. And sometimes your personal agenda is not really the priority, because the universe is geared for the greater good. It's sometimes, you know, the program, the universe goes, and somebody gets damaged. You know, it does. You know, it's almost like an inevitable. Somebody, mm-hmm, some lives or some people or some civilization are damaged. And you have the providence that comes back and have the grace to restore it in another point of time or another existence to bring it back. So, you know, providence has the way to correct.
Okay, let me go back and make sure that I understand that one. So what you're saying is either in this lifetime or maybe in a past lifetime, for some reason or another, perhaps we got distracted or something, you know, something happened.
Yes. For instance, you know, you may be, because not everything, I wanted to explain basically is this. Akashic Record is a system of check and balance that works for a greater system, which is the karmic balance, the dharmic balance, and there's a third element for karma, which we call sanskara. So the karma itself, it's a more deeper concept than, you know, punishment and reward. It's balance. There is no moral codes on that. You are responsible for what you do.
Cause and effect.
Right. Like
and
with
everything
gravity,
is registered.
You don't say gravity punishes,
yes,
you and you fall down.
Yes.
You know, an example of what we might be talking about when we talk about past lives, and like, for instance, say you're in this particular lifetime. Well, obviously, we're in this particular lifetime. That was silly. But you have a pattern that is repeating itself. And
okay,
you know, you think you've learned from that. You think you've done this, but the pattern keeps, you know, coming back. It keeps repeating itself. One of the things that or one of the tools you have, one of the options as a spiritual being, is to review your records, your Akashic records, to see that. And you may find out that in a prior life there was this issue that was not resolved. And it's trying to get resolved, which is why it keeps repeating. So you're able to reintegrate.
How does one go about accessing one's Akashic records if, people out there that...
That is a little bit more complicated.
It's a little bit more complicated. There's a lot of people out there that go out and they say they read the Akashic Records.
Every day. You know, you can access Akashic, you know. When you do it, I don't know if any one of you are familiar with tarot. The tarot was designed, you know, the history of tarot is very interesting. that there was design.
Actually, that's a topic for a whole
yeah,
topic
well, but
for
I'm going to give just
a,
because we're going to talk about archetypes. The tarot was designed by the high priest of Egypt when they realized and they received the message from the gods that mankind would be soon be entering a very long dark ages. But the knowledge that was gathered during the ancient world should not be destroyed. So they put on cards and images all the archetypes, and they decide, how are we going to pass this on? How are we going to pass those images that work almost like a yantra, because a yantra is a configuration of a portal. When you concentrate, you can go to another dimension. That's the basic of yantra. The tarot cards are almost the same. How we can pass those arcanas or those archetypes, how a person has to, you know, how this is going to survive time. And after a lot of discussion on where to find the people that were honorable enough to carry it, they said, honorable people will not live forever. And maybe not. We're not going to find enough people honorable enough to carry this. So they decided that the only way to make this knowledge go back and circulate the world was through vice. So they create the tarot.
Which is kind of universal.
And they create, from the tarot, create tarot cards, and from the cards games. So they create that, and they were right there in Egypt, in the port of everything else, with merchants and everything. So they created games, and they taught people games with the intention that wherever they went, that mind will be awakened by those symbols, and they will have access, because those are keys. Each one of those cards open a section. So
that
when
is
you
absolutely fascinating. I've been reading tarot cards for 15 years, and I've never knew that or even thought about the history of it. Thank you so much for expanding my horizon there.
So, you know, that's exactly it. When you open each one of those archetypes, what you open is a dimension of experience, of a role that we have. So every one of us already passed to the phase of being a magus, something that you get amazed and you want to learn more, or you go through the phase of the priest, the high priestess, which is you want to know and nurture something, is the mother archetype, is, you know, someone that guides, someone that's there and have a spiritual authority. Or you go to the, you know, as women, we go to the empress, you know, that's like very concerned about her physical body and how her environment, if she needs flowers and things like that.
Green M&Ms,
you know, or, and then you go through this and you pass through the process of death, which is not physical death. The process of death is always a process of rebirth. Then
it's
you have
change.
The change, and you go, you know, you can go there and you face the devil, which is material challenges, especially related to profession and money. So you go on and on. I mean, each one of them, when they get together, they form a phrase. So each one of them is a symbol and at the same time a word, a keyword. So when you put them together, you have entire phrase. And this is not only with the great arcanas, the bigger arcanas, but the small arcanas as well. So this is how it goes. The tarot was a way that was sent through time, a gift sent through time from Egypt, and was given to those commerce and merchants in Egypt, and they promoted and, you know, and dispersed and disseminated information, and that's the reason you have the name Gypsies. Because it was gypsies, but it was gypsies. And they became itself because they held the knowledge of certain things. They held the contact with Akashic Records. It's only is this the only way to assess Akashic? No.
No, the tarot
is
a tool for it.
But it's a key.
No, I'm a little confused.
Because
okay.
normally when we, you know, when, let's say the land person, and I might fall into this category, when you think of tarot, you think of it as maybe understanding where you're at right now and potentials for the future.
Well, you know, does that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, I understand that thinking might be completely off, but I think that's
kind of how the majority of people think about it.
It depends on the dimension that you want to give.
Yeah, that's a subset.
Because you see,
okay.
the tarot itself, it talks about mutability of the soul and the connection with the all that is. But the connection of all there is also have a manifestation in your 3D. That can be like, you know, you really are in the movement of changing your perspective in life and this, your soul is asking for more. And, the, you know, this is wow, big. When you go to the three-dimensional way what's happening, you know, you're about to lose your job and you have to move. So, you know what I mean? Your relationship
okay.
went out or, you know, you lost something big, you lost somebody that was, you know what I'm talking about? This translates.
Yeah.
The high mutations or the alchemization and transformation process that every soul passes in the process of experiencing and gathering knowledge through art school is expressed in the little things that everyday day, you know, daily activities.
Well, I think that people that look at tarot as fortune telling or divination are really
missing the point.
Yeah, they're limiting what tarot can be. It's you know, when we talk about the Akashic Records, which contains the knowledge of all, if you're looking towards the future, there are different paths. Things change. What you get into the topic or the possibility of Maktub, which is, you know, is there free will? Is there self-determination? The fact is that as we said earlier, God is beyond our imagination. We can't limit him because he's limitless. So what's to say that it's not both? That, you know, you do have free will. You can choose a path. And in this timeline, in this reality, that you went left instead of right. But in another reality, you went right. And what you do when you do the tarot and you're trying to look ahead is you're looking at possibilities for
a future.
The tarot
doesn't take your mastery of life. The tarot will not say to you, this is going to happen. It gives possibilities of future. What the tarot says to you is like, this will, you know, it's bound to happen. If you don't change your attitude, your outlook, or the way anything else, this is what's bound to happen. But doesn't mean that you are not master of your destiny. You can say, you know, heck with this. I don't want this. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you guys this. What do you think about other ways of accessing the Akashic? For example, Edgar Cayce and the way that he would go into a trance and get, you know, he would hear, you know, voices actually speaking and giving information. What do you think about those types of prophets?
There are other ways to access the Akashic Records, but let me say that as far as, you know, if to start with, anybody who says it's like I've got an exclusive method for accessing the Akashic Records, or you can only access it through this, have a limited understanding of the possibilities of the Akashic Records. It's another aspect of us limiting something that is limitless.
It's limitless. You know, there's a lot of people that can actually access the Akashic Records through the help of angels.
Yeah, every individual can access the Akashic Records at some level.
And you see, the beauty of it is, as you are really in a spiritual path, you have, you know, I would say you have not one guardian angel. You have a team. You have a team of masters. You are, you know, just waiting for you to say, I want to work on this. You have a team of masters. You have a team of, I call them the management crisis people, you know, which is angelic. You have, because you do need them. Sometimes you need them. You need to do something.
Some of us need more than,
one group. You know, and you need them because sometimes you need to do something, an automatic pilot. It's like when you're very dead tired, you're driving home, and you say, oh, God, I just need to get home. And then you got home and said, I don't know how I got here.
How did I get here?
Yeah.
Well,
you know, that's different. You know,
fortunately, your autopilot was looking out for you.
Yes. So, but, you know, don't trust on that, though. You know, ask for help, but, you know, don't drink and do this stuff.
Right.
But, anyhow, what I'm talking about, that you have this huge team. You have teachers. You have masters. You have guides, because guides and masters are different. And you have your ancestors that really want you to succeed, because you are their representative here. So they want necessarily to you to succeed and be happy and do that. And you have your family of light, a family of gathering of souls and oversoul that really are really rooting for you. So when you are on your spiritual path and you need an information, a lot of people have access to their past life or a situation. It gets revealed either by meditation or a vision or even
inspiration
to dreams.
Dream interpretation.
And, angelic humans, right? From your website, you talk about angelic humans and how they are helping awaken people and to remember who they really are and why they're here.
That's true. You have, here in this 3D existence, you have others that are going through this path that can help you connect with your path or help set you on your path. Now, keep in mind that when it all boils down to it, it is your path, and
uh-huh.
It is something that you have to walk. We talk about a spiritual practice a lot over in Humanity Healing and our university section of it, because spiritual practice is practice. It's something you have to do on a regular basis. You've got to make a personal commitment to work through these things. Nobody can just come up, lay a hand on your head and say, okay, now you're an enlightened being. It's not going to happen that way.
It's the same. This is the biggest problem that I see, and I think is one of the blind spots of the light workers. And nowadays, is that they say, you know, they argue, and I think there's the path of less effort. It's like, I don't need to learn anything, I just need to remember. Yes, you need to remember, of course.
But you're not going to remember unless you do the work now.
Yes,
yeah.
There's nothing, you know what I mean? Spirituality is a muscle. And if you really want to run a marathon, and this is what the life is a really good marathon. Even St. Paul says, you know, in the end of his life, what was his last phrase was, I run the good, you know, I fought the good fight.
Yeah.
I run the good race. You know, it's not me. It's no longer I that exist, but Christ exists on me. The Christ being, you know, not Jesus. He says Christ Jesus, but the intention is Christ consciousness. Is no longer I. I run the good race. I fought the good fight. So if you really want to do what you are supposed to do and what you received, you know, as a mission or as a purpose or as a contract that you have with your, you know, the higher spiritual family, you have to exercise.
You have to work. This is the way, you know,
yeah.
As a Reiki practitioner, this is one of the things that has always driven me crazy about Reiki, is that, you know, you'll learn Reiki, and in the weekend you can become a master. And it's like, okay, not really. You can get the attunement for being, you know, on the master level, but to actually be a master requires years of dedication, of practice, of service, so that you have an understanding. You can't. It's not just channeling the energy, but you have an understanding of the energy. Now, that's true
exactly.
Mastership. And it's
and
this way.
Experience,
on
I think, is required for mastership.
Experience
yes.
is required, because how are you going to know the as a matter of fact, the man I studied under, it was amazing to work with him, because, you know, you'd sit there as a young Reiki practitioner. It's like, okay, I'm feeling something not right here. And he'll come over, it's like, okay, I've seen this before. You know, go have your thyroid gland checked. And you're like, whoa, how could he tell that just from, you know, but the fact that he has done this enough and he's seen this and he's learned the flavor, the texture, the feel of the energy, to know that this tends to be something that he's seen with other people that have had this problem. You know, that's something that you won't really get without a lot of practice. And so it's like it fits on any spiritual path. You actually have to walk the path in order to fully achieve the benefits of it. Our goal on the spiritual path is to learn to be more soul-infused, to live with a greater understanding and a greater connection with our higher self, which is what gives the access to the Akashic Records, getting back over off the sidetrack. I wasn't back onto the path of the Akashic Records. It is.
I love that soul infused. It was worth it to go on the sidetrack just to hear soul infused.
This is one of our buzzwords we use a lot when we're with Humanity Healing. It's like this is we teach a technique or a school of mystery as such called the Stellar Codes. And it's, you know, it's a name we came up with, but it's based on ageless wisdoms and traditions from a lot of different sources from our earliest beginnings. For instance, our oldest known religious writings are the pyramid texts. They're like 3,500 BCE.
Uh-huh.
And there's a wonderful quote there that says, "I am a soul, I am a star of gold." And... These are the teachings, and some of these things, the teachings we do through the Stellar Codes. It is a path. It's not the only path towards enlightenment. It's a path. Yeah. It's a school. But it is a way of learning to become more soul-infused through the building of one's personal antahkarana.
Your connection with your higher self.
Understand, of course, that everybody that is born has a connection from the higher self down to the lower self, or your physical body. This is the silver cord, the sutrama.
Okay,
we're not going to do this. When we build it back, that's the antahkarana, and that's what we're talking about. When you build this back, you become more soul-infused, and then you're able to have greater access to the knowledge and the understanding on that plane.
And do you think that the fact that we have so many different ways of connecting with these things, this information, and each other, is so that we can use our free will and experience things as individuals?
Yes,
because we know that's the interesting thing. And the Egyptians had that very well expressed. The Egyptians didn't believe that all men were created equal. They think that equality and such, you know, which is actually the principles of that guided, you know, United States, it was an invention of man, because nature does not create their beings equal. You have the strong and you have the weak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, men, as they evolve, as society, they realize that this is something in nature that we can change through free will, to protect the weak, to nurture the sick, and this and that. But in on nature is the law of a strong. So we're not created equal. And therefore, the ways that we could apprehend information varies not only from the structure and how you got taught, how you develop your background, your level of understanding, and education. So there are many ways, we usually say, there are as many truths as there are different human beings on Earth.
One of the things that from Plato that came out, and this is where I think the term, the light maker, or the
light worker
came from, is there's a quote from Plato where he talks about, you know, souls on their way to Earth pass through this one room, and each of us take a taper with a lit flame down with us to be a light in this world. But there are those that have the time and the ability to stay in this room a little bit longer, that are able to gather together a bundle of these tapers in order to have a torch. These are the torchbearers, the light bringers to humanity. These are the ones that lift and inspire all of us by their actions and their service to others. Yeah,
the Mother Teresa's and the Gandhi's of the world.
Mm, yes,
exactly. But not just those guys. I mean, those are the big ones we know. We hear about these. But there's the everyday hero that
yep.
you know
that
sees
to,
a sees a burning car and runs over there and saves the child at a risk to themselves. There was the gentleman in the military that there was a bus crash.
Somebody from Canada going to New York, and the bus, and it was like 3 in the morning. This soldier, he was just dismissed. He just came home from Afghanistan, and then he was driving from New York down to Alabama for his daughter's birthday.
To meet his daughter's birthday, he sees this crash, and rather than it's like, you know, I've got to get to Alabama for my daughter's birthday, I've been overseas, he stops. He puts himself in harm's way. He gets everybody off the bus.
He gets 32 people out of the bus by himself.
You know, he gets them safely.
Wow.
The rescue workers get there. He's like, okay, you're in good hands, and then he heads on.
And he doesn't even leave a name.
Those are the people that we're talking about. Those are the ones that hold the torch for others because they show us the best that humanity can be.
The people right in our own communities are saying that
it doesn't have to be the Mother Teresa, it doesn't have to be right in our community. To change the world. You can change the world by a very small, single, simple act that then ripples out to touch others.
You know, and you see, the thing is, we are in a community of souls. And it's another mistake that most of the light workers do, is that they think that what their mission has to be something huge, magnificent and big and will touch everybody, when actually what you need to do is start something. Because once you start and you have constancy, you know, we always say ourselves, Humanity Healing was created to be a launch pad for others. You know, we are very happy to find somebody that already have a project, and we say, yes, good, well, yes, sure, and we go there and we give energy and support, because for me, you know, and for us in general, and you can say that about our own community, we're so happy to be just the oil that greased the wheel.
We
don't want to recreate the wheel.
You know, Humanity Healing was never set up to recreate the wheel, and this is what we laugh about. We just wanted to be the grease to help the wheel turn. We wanted to help others make a difference.
You know, it
well,
you
make a difference yourself by doing that, so you get kind of into a paradoxical situation.
It falls more under the quote that I believe was Gandhi also, that said, it's amazing how much can get done if it doesn't matter who gets the credit.
Oh, wow.
That's a great quote.
That's a terrific quote.
That's kind of how we believe. Humanity Healing for years, as we would do things and the like, Leonie and I were very hesitant about, you know, out there as the founders of Humanity Healing. Because it wasn't us. It wasn't about us. We just were the hands. We just planted the seed, and Humanity Healing grew as a result of that. But Humanity Healing is the result of the actions of many, many, many individuals who have all stepped forward to say, I want to help make a difference. And they've done that not only through the community and through inspiration. They've done that not only through learning some of the things that are out there and then sharing that with others. They've done that through the growth of, for instance, our nonprofit, Humanity Healing International, where we're, you know, we have a school of 458 children in Uganda that we support and that we do projects with, and we ripple these out elsewhere to try to help others and to raise humanity where compassion is needed. It's never been about Leonie and I. It's always been about what we can do together as humanity.
You know, and that also brings up the really kind of funny point, is that Leonie told me that you guys didn't even put your bios up until quite recently because it was not about you.
Yeah, we didn't, because, you see, we got a friend of ours, you know, bless his heart. He's a marketing guy. And then he said, you know, you guys, people will not trust you if they don't see that there's a human being behind that. And it's like, okay, but I don't want to. And it's like, well, but you see, the problem is that you live in a world that people have to connect with you and see and know your history to be able to identify and say, well, this came from, you know, I mean, it's not a fake person that's making this up.
It's not a secret project.
You know what I mean? It's not something like that. So we just put the bio in, and to be Frank, and was like, oh my God, the Bible, I really don't like it.
Yeah, we'd much prefer to just, you know, be here and do things and not put ourselves forward. But we have found that when we do things like, you know, be on this radio show today, that sometimes that will ripple out and we'll make another connection that will advance, you know, a goal that we have, or it will help somebody else, or maybe even inspire someone else to go out and do something and ripple out.
Absolutely. I mean, you've inspired me, so there's one right there. Our chat board is just going crazy, so there's
they're spreading love over the chat board.
My computer overheated and kicked off. I'm just now rebooting, so I've been looking over in Leonie's computer. But I'll share a story with you along these lines that I don't tell many people. There was I was traveling back from work. It was a long day flying across country, and I was in the Charlotte airport and trying to board the last plane to get here to Richmond, Virginia. End of the day, everyone's cranky, and the gates open to board the plane, and nothing happens. And I go up to the front, and there's a little old lady up at the front. I mean, I'm a Boy Scout. I love little old ladies. Right?
Uh-huh.
It's a little old lady up at the front. And she was flying to Asheville. At the doors, the gates were opening at the exact same time as she was at the Richmond gate, and she didn't understand that this wasn't her gate. And as a result, nobody was boarding. And I'm like, okay, the Boy Scout thing kicks in, and I introduce myself, and I said, did I hear that you were going to Asheville? Well, I'm going that way myself. Let me walk you over to the correct gate. And I got her luggage, and I walked with her. She couldn't walk fast. And along the way, I heard that, you know, she was a great-grandmother. This is the first time she had flown. She'd gone to see her great-granddaughter. She was meeting her daughter in Asheville. And we finally get to the gate. The gate at Asheville was just about to close. I stop the lady. We get there. We get her on board the plane. I wait for the U.S. air attendant. I get back. I explain the situation. She'd never flown. They had to have someone waiting for her in Asheville to make sure she met up with her daughter because she was a little confused with the long flight and not having done it before. And as soon as I got that commitment, I turned around and ran like a bat out of hell back to my gate, convinced that, you know, I'd already missed my flight. Okay.
Genuine people in the world... That is so real and so genuine, and that's, I think, what's missing from so many people's consciousness is they wouldn't even think to do that.
It gets better. I get back to the gate. The gate is open. And I'm like, oh, thank goodness for, it's still open. He said, they can't take off until I close this door. I wasn't going to close this door until you got back. And I'm like, thank you. So I walk down. Okay, I'm getting choked up here. So I walk down, I get on board the plane. The plane bursts out in applause.
Oh.
And I'm thoroughly embarrassed at this point in time, but I get my seat. And the waitress comes up and brings me some water because obviously since I'm sweating from, you know, I'm out of shape, I ran through the airport, anyway. So she brings me water. What was it? She told me, she says, it was amazing. Almost every single person getting on the plane told her or the other flight attendant, it's like, you need to hold the plane. There's a guy helping a little old lady down to another gate.
So there are
What happens is when you do an act of selfless service and people see it, they participate with what you're doing. They connect. All these people connected on a heart level with what I was doing. I was doing the action, but they made the connection. And they brought this into themselves, and I guarantee that at some point in the future, or it's probably already happened with many of them, they will be in a situation where they have the ability to help somebody else.
And they will pay forward.
And they will remember, and they will pay this forward. And this act will ripple out and continue to ripple out as we connect with each other and as we grow as humanity.
It makes so much sense.
Something I also kind of wanted to hit on, because I know, like, sometimes when people are thinking about spirituality, what they're, you know, everybody's waiting for this big thunderbolt, and like when they want to talk about talk to their higher selves or something, they're waiting for this great big booming voice from the sky. And also, you know, it's not always like that. I mean, most of the time it's not like that. It's something that's very soft and gentle, but something you clearly can understand. And I think doing deeds like what Humanity Healing does, you know, if you look at Humanity Healing where it is today, you know, it's kind of easy to sit there and say, you're like, oh, my God, I'm never going to get as big as they are. But you guys weren't always Humanity Healing. You were much smaller.
Big?
And it was,
you think we big?
Oh,
my God.
My God. Do not even go there. You know what, though?
Oh, well,
we think
it's just like we're so small. We're never going to grow.
Oh, my God.
If you look at the job out there, it's David and Goliath. We're not even to David yet. We're like, you know, a baby David. You know, there is so much growth that we need to do, not only as individuals, but we need to do as an organization. We need to do as humanity to tackle the problems that are out there today. There is such
That's
a need and passion everywhere in the world. And it's important that each of us learn that compassion, connect at the heart level, and go forward and do the job to raise the other person. Because when we raise any person, we raise ourselves. This is the law of one. When we help another, we help ourselves. When we heal another, we heal ourselves.
And this is the basics of our nonprofit. Every single one of our measures, we don't regard ourselves, and that's one of the things that make us like look like a funny duck for the IRS, is that we are not a spiritual, which, you know, is spiritual per se, and the IRS always told us, like, you should become a church. Well, we're not a church. We're not a cult. You know what I mean? So we cannot be spiritual in that sense. And the other time, in the other side, we're not humanitarian completely because we don't want to patch things up.
Yeah,
we don't want to put a Band-Aid. Oh, my God, look at you. You got
activists.
Bombed. You got bombed, so let's put a Neosporin and this.
This is probably a problem. A lot of humanitarian organizations just put Band-Aids on problems. They don't.
But, you know, they have their value. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I honor the first responders and the second waivers, which are the humanitarians. You know, the first responders like Red Cross, they're there. The disaster strikes, they're there, you know. And
then you have second responders like the World, you know, Food Organization, the Red Cross has already, and the UN have already set up the refugee camp. And, the World Food Program comes in to help, you know, feed the people because it is a crisis.
Yeah,
it's
got
the third waivers.
We are the third waivers.
We are third waivers. They're the ones that come in and say, okay, how do we to reintegrate these people back into their lives so that they can continue forward and not simply be another number at an IDP camp.
Or victims. You know, we enter there to give the element of, I would say, the quantum leap energy of empowerment, of education, to transform through knowledge, through wisdom, and through compassion. And how we do that, what we do, for instance, in our program on the school, which is our pilot in Uganda, is that everything we do for the school of orphans, 458 kids, like Chris said, we teach them to pay forward. And it's very important for an orphan to be reintegrated on the fabric of society to learn how to be give back to their society. So we teach them some skills, life skills, that will help them as going out of the orphanage to find jobs. But we also, while they're there, they are learning how to sew and how to do things because they are going to help other kids to dress, to have, you know, pads, which is one of our projects.
Yeah, it's a project we're just starting up at. It's every project that Humanity Healing does has an element of selfless service and of paying it forward in it. So, for instance, you know, we talk about, you know, we don't just, you know, give fish out like the second responders. You know, the adage, you know, teach a man to fish, you know, or give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day, teach a man to fish, he'll eat for a lifetime. What we want to do, what we're trying to do, is to teach others how to teach people to fish.
And share. So what you'd like, every single element in every place we go, our requirement is we're going to go there, we're going to help you put this there, but, you know, the mindset is to teach people how to replicate.
You're the teacher. You're the teacher's teacher.
We're not. We're just here, like, taking care of the kitty.
Yeah, we take care of the kitty. For an example, this is one of the things we had in Uganda. We did a model farm, and we were able to bring in a hybrid strain of cassava that had been raised to give greater yield, be more drought and disease resistant in the region, and because. One of the problems in sub-Saharan Africa, of course, is food security.
And water.
If people are worried about where their next meal is, they certainly can't, work on the, if they're thinking about their stomach, they can't, let's take this into chakras. If they're thinking about, their root chakra, they can't be thinking about what they need to expand their heart chakra, right? You can't worry about expanding out, love and consciousness if you're worried about the empty belly. And so what we did with this is we brought it in, it got raised, it started going, and then the people that are benefiting from this, a portion of this, every harvest, the cuttings, go out to other people in the neighborhood as part of a commitment to selfless service and helping others so that we can spread this out and make this benefit for more people. But not only are you just improving the food security in the region, what you are doing is you're helping reweave a sense of community in a society that has been devastated by war and by AIDS. So we're rebuilding a fabric of community in a region that needs or has lost that. So it's a multifaceted approach to healing.
The first year we planted 10 hectares of land with this type of cassava in the first year. And in the first year we provide food security for 500 people besides the orphans. Now and we are going to the third year, and so this replicated, by much, because the second people that received already had the command to pass to more. So you grow this geometrically instead of just adding one by one, and this is how you do it. You teach how to share, even in despair. If you let the human being kick the survival mode, they will give the worst of themselves. Always. People cannot live long in the survival mode. And this is not only by food, but emotionally too. When you are about to go, you have a big crisis, and you keep doing things all the time in survival mode, you're going to have a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, this is like when you were talking, when the last time when we had you on, and you were talking about all you really are doing. There's a lot that you're doing, but when you boil it down, is you're providing hope.
Yes. That's exactly it. And that there is a chance, and, you have to start, tilting the balance of injustice. And the balance of injustice comes from the mindset that every human need is a human right, and that in the base level, as humans, we are all equals. Doesn't matter what. We bleed the same. We feel the same.
Yeah. There
we cry.
There is only one earth. There is only
one
humanity.
Doesn't matter what.
Well, this is when we talk about the skin suit. It's like what we see in humanity healing, how we approach, people, we see souls. We don't see the skin suit. We don't care if you're black, you're white, you're Jewish,
mm-hmm.
you're straight, you're female, you're educated, you're whatever. That's the skin suit. That's what you are on the outside. That's your 3D reality. What is important is that you are a soul. And we were all beautiful in the eyes of God.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you keep that perspective, and stop looking at just, the outside, that's what causes fear. You need to look inside. Start with what we are as a common humanity and work out as opposed to what our differences are and try to work in.
When somebody finds themselves in the position where they are not seeing themselves as a soul or as a collective whole, let's say this is all kind of new to them, Or maybe, you know, sometimes we just get wrapped up and we really forget. What are some steps or some advice that Humanity Healing or that you guys as individuals would give to people to get really beyond the fear, beyond the outside world, and get into themselves?
Well, you know, first of all, you have to remember one thing. We all here, you know, we came here not for the ride and not to see the landscape and enjoy the beaches and stuff. We came here with a contract. Yeah, they're nice. But you came here with a contract. And you came here with a commitment to experience human existence, because the human existence is one of the most powerful school of lessons that a soul can go. Because you have contact with the unknown, which is darkness and duality, and you are able to live and see the perspective as you move through. You always have the challenge of the perspective. In the perfect world of the everlasting, and the other side, everything is just pure love. But when you enter a three-dimensional world, when you enter existence on Earth, you experience fear. There's only two forces on this universe. One is fear, and one is love. The other one is love. When you come here, you will be challenged both ways. And if you keep a perspective that even evil, the way it manifests, and I'm not going to go to the question of evil here, because otherwise it would be just a program about what is evil, what is passive evil, what is active evil, and how they work. But, you know, basically...
That's another show.
When you... Or not. Sure. So when you come here, you come to understand that everybody is here to pursue happiness. Everybody's here to pursue decency and balance. Some people think that in order to get that, they have to hurt others because they just see their perspective.
Or they can only be happy if they have what someone else has.
Oh yeah,
you know, I'll only be happier if I can keep up with the Joneses and have like the extra car or something like that. That's very 3D. That's very materialistic. I guess with the question you're asking is, you know, how can someone take the next step? Are you looking as far as what's the first step as far as your spiritual growth? What's the first step as far as connecting to humanity? Ultimately, they're the same thing. But
I was going to say both.
Well, I think as far as the absolute first step as far as spiritual growth, I think, is to be quiet. Is to meditate, to reflect, to sit there, to try to empty yourself. We make so much noise that we can't hear God often.
Got it.
And so I would think the first step, and what I tell people, the first step, you know, there's a lot of things you could do. Go out, take a Reiki course, go do this, go do that. But the first step is to sit there and reflect and meditate and be. And as you start to do that, the path will open as far as what the next step will be. You know, as far as connecting to humanity, oh, wow, that's an easy one. The thing to do is to connect with Humanity Healing and help out on one of our projects. That's a simple answer.
Well, I was going to tell you, that is actually a question that I was saving for the end of the show, because there are a lot of things you guys have going on. One of the things that we didn't talk about is I do see on your website that there is a link if you want a request. But if you wanted to, if somebody is interested in becoming a prayer warrior, how can they contact you?
Well, first of all, they can send us an email. There's a couple places we do this through. We actually have a Yahoo group that we have connected up that's supposed to be just for healers. There's also in our community, as a matter of fact, that was the first thing Humanity Healing did when it got started, was to do this Yahoo group. It wasn't, you know, that's how we started up our business. But the other thing is we do have a community. It's about 9,000 people, some more active than others, but it's about 9,000 people, community.humanityhealing.net. And we do have active groups on there, like the Prayer Warriors group. And many other groups as far as spiritual
support groups,
advancement.
Like suicide.
The suicide prevention group has been an important one for us over the years, where we've got
you know, resource materials and connections. If you have somebody, you know somebody that is going through that dark night of the soul and is considering suicide, you know, get the information there. Connect with them there. We do have professionals that we work with that we can get you to. That to help save you, but often what is required or what a person needs when they're facing that sort of thing is some just to know that there's somebody out there that cares, whether they live or die. It's wow. Sometimes it's as simple as that. But that's the your suicide prevention awareness is there. But there's a lot of support groups. There's one on the Akashic Records that's there. There's groups to learn different meditation techniques there. There's a lot of things there. And the activity is based on the people that are participating and doing things. You'll have some groups will surge, and there's a lot of activity, and then people sort of it's almost like a phase. They get what they need, and then they move to another group, or they'll move on with their lives.
It is a healing
cycle back.
So it is not really a highly energetic like with quiz and this and that. It's a healing. Community.
Yeah, we're
so
much more of
a
soft
base.
Touch type organization.
Got it. So with everything that you guys have going on, what's next for Humanity Healing?
A nervous breakdown.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, I vacation would be nice.
Yeah.
Not anytime soon. But you know the next big thing that you'll be hearing coming out of Humanity Healing is we are gearing up to announce a new initiative with Humanity Healing International. This is, as I said, this is our nonprofit, and it's called the Pads for Schoolgirls Project, and we'll be announcing this in October. We're really kicking it and gearing up. We're getting all our ducks in a row to make sure this all ripples out, essentially, you know, at its best. But at its heart,
what
it's all about is in sub-Saharan Africa, one of the leading reasons for disempowerment of young girls, and the resulting cycle of poverty and despair that goes on in many of these lives.
Human trafficking and prostitution.
Correct.
And AIDS.
It has to do with the fact that when a girl gets old enough to start her biological process of her menstrual cycle, she often will not be able to continue in school because she doesn't have the ability to handle her monthly flow in a public setting.
Got it.
And what happens is they end up dropping out. They end up,
yeah,
you know, having children. They
wow.
end up doing this sort of thing. There's actually a statistic out there of girls who have gotten AIDS because they've recycled sanitary products out of the trash. I mean, this is horrendous. So what this program is it's a multifaceted program. We're working with a wonderful organization, Dea Viola, with the Baby Flamingo Company. They designed and fabricated the first of a set of pad kits, which will take a girl through
reusable
the month, and they're reusable so that they can continue to recycle these and reuse them through the year. And we're also starting at Future Victory, the pilot program, as we're going to expand out the vocational training program there to include sewing and seamstress skills, so that the girls will be learning a trade as a seamstress while they're there. But part of their core curriculum, as they are learning to sew, one of the things that they will do is they will make pads and these pad kits. Then as their service to others, they will be giving these out to other girls in the region who are in need of this sort of thing. So this
I love
is how we,
everything you do ties itself back to itself. That's, I think, a real strength of your organization.
Well, what we'll do is we'll get the pilot program up and going, and then we hope to ripple this, you know, once you have your module here, your module is the sewing seamstress vocational, you know, and the pipeline of people here in the States, because we will be posting up on the website. We don't have it there right now. We will be posting up all the plans on how to make these. So if you're someone who sews and enjoys sewing and does this sort of thing, you can get the plans. You can make a couple of kits so you can send them to Humanity Healing and know that these will be going to girls in need.
And we know we wrap up.
I can sew. I will do that. I can sew.
There are a lot of people out there that want to do more than just to donate money. Now, don't get us wrong. For the projects like this, we love people donate money because we're able to purchase the things that we need to help these kids.
The
sewing machines. But there are a lot of people out there that want to give of themselves, of their time, of their heart, of their energy. And this,
I think people crave that hands-on experience. I mean,
exactly.
I work with children
and
with special needs, and I find that the volunteers really crave that hands-on experience more than anything else.
And this gives the people a chance to make something that they know is going to make a significant difference in the life of somebody else. And so it's a way of connecting somebody in, like, the heartland of America with a young girl in Uganda who
yeah.
now has an opportunity to stay in school, break that cycle of poverty and despair, and finish her education and become a force that will help change the face of that region.
Because when you empower women, you empower entire community.
That's correct.
You know what I mean? Because you empower a woman that will have kids, and that those kids will be already set up in another level. You know, and those kids will itself create, and we weave society. So this is one of the biggest concerns we have is, this is our initiatives, it's, you know, empowering girls, because we are all seeds of humanity, and, you know, we're just one. We're all children of the universe. We're all seeds of humanity, and then when we empower kids, they are our future, and we cannot afford a world anymore that is polluted by ignorance and by, you know, despair, by a lack of
compassion
and basic resources. You know,
I
can't afford this
more.
You know, we're getting ready to hit the end of your show, but if we had one message to send out, it's to reconnect at your heart level, engender that compassion that can truly raise humanity to the level that it should be. You know, we want to rise, you know, raise the level of consciousness on this planet, practice compassion. And moreover, practice active compassion. Do something with the compassion. Help somebody. This is how we're going to, you know, raise us all.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you
more. Even the little things. Even the little things, you know, not everyone is in a position to make a grand gesture, but you can always pay the toll for the guy behind you or feed the meter that's blinking when you walk by. You know, it doesn't always take much, just a smile.
Sometimes just a smile and holding the door for somebody else might
exactly.
make a significant difference in the life of that person.
Exactly.
We never know how we touch others. And we probably never will know all their ramifications, but simply the act of touching another's heart creates a positive change. And if you make a practice of doing that, you will be one of those lights that
you're going to live to be the light that you were meant to.
Yes.
You know, we should say that. You activate that part of you that brings down what is your contract. You know, we didn't come here to be tubes, you know, just tubes walking around, eating and stuff. But we came to be something special. We came to be, it's a lot involved with incarnating, you know what I mean? That's a lot of energy and the entropy of conceiving a soul and maintaining this soul on Earth. So it's not a dice game. It's not a game of random chances. And you're here because you were needed here, and your participation is needed. It doesn't mean necessarily that you have to participate in Africa. It means that you can just go and see your relatives or see somebody close to you, talk to your kids, you know, less TV, more interaction, but, you know, if cooking a good meal and making memories, or, you know, anything, live this and live your life always. You know,
I think that's a great note to end the show on, because the reason we started Spiritual Perspectives was, you know, just to talk to each other. And so, you know, I have just learned so much speaking to both of you today, Leanne Leger and Christopher Buck. Thank you so much. so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us on, but I'm not sure we've answered any of the questions topics that we were originally going to talk about.
Well, you know what? That's okay, because that just means I need to have you guys back again.
oh gosh. You're going to
just going to say any final thoughts, Don, and that's just that. I knew that would be one of them, that we need to have you back again. There's so much to cover, and there doesn't ever seem to be enough time. But we do have a very exciting episode coming up for you next week. You really are not going to want to miss. And I know Don is super excited about this episode, as I am. We are welcoming the international best-selling author Kathleen McGowan to our show, and we'll be discussing information found throughout the Expected One series, things like the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the possibility of a book of love written by Jesus or by Libro Rosso, and it's going to be just a wonderful chance to speak with Kathleen about her debut novel, The Expected One, which was on the New York Times bestseller list. That will be Tuesday at our normal time at 4 o'clock. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Angel Boy Art and SoulEngineering.com. We will see you again next Tuesday. Thank you to our listeners and chatters and everyone. Just have a blessed, wonderful day.